Well, like I said, today on Shaping Special Hearts, we are going to do a special holiday show, and we have entitled it Keeping Peace on Earth This Christmas for Families with Special Needs. Many of you know that I have a son that will be 13 in just 3 short weeks, and we have lived for years with Christmas not necessarily being a time when we celebrate peace on earth. Just yesterday, I had to go get him from school with a migraine headache because the sights and the sounds and the excitement of the season are so difficult for him to process. So for some families, this time of year is not as much fun as it is for others. So you might see that in some of your ministries. If you're a family who is listening to this, you may be nodding your head. So what we're going to try to do is give some tips, some advice, some encouragement, some concrete ways that you might can end run some of the holiday stress. And here today on the show, I have one of my favorite guests. This is her second time on. Katie, you're my first person I've had on twice.
Yay!
Katie Weatherby, who is fantastic. Katie was on back when we talked about adapting special events. And as we discussed adapting special events, some things came up about pageants and plays. And in the back of my mind, I thought, we might need to talk about Christmas time. We might need to talk about that. Katie graciously is giving us her time and so much more today. So, Katie, I'm going to let you fill our guests in on your background and what you're doing now.
Okay. Well, thanks, Nancy, for having me. It's always so much fun to chat with you. And I really think this show is such a great venue for problem solving because I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers. Nobody does. But when we put our heads together, we always come up with some really good solutions for kids and families affected by disabilities. I am a special education teacher by training. I taught ed and then had babies and decided not to teach full-time anymore. So now I am an educational and ministry consultant, and I travel and provide support to churches who are interested in including kids with disabilities, and I'm excited because I'm writing a book, actually, with my friend Jolene Flavo.
Who was on our last show.
She was on last time, exactly. We're writing a book called Every Child Welcome, and it's specifically for children's pastors and volunteers who want easy ways to modify and include kids with disabilities in Sunday school and midweek programs. So that's really exciting. It's being published by Kriegel Publishing, and it'll be out in 2015.
Oh, that is amazing, Katie. What great news that's going to be for everybody. I can't wait to have both of you on when the book comes out, and we can talk about that. That is just great work.
So fun.
Oh, we would. Thanks. It would be more fun than the law allows. It would be great. So, Katie, a lot of people who may not have a person with special needs or some kind of disability in their home or in their immediate family might not immediately comprehend why this season would create a problem. I know the first time I had to deal with it, I was caught a little off guard, and I lived with it in my home. So I want part of our conversation today to be about educating our listeners in that light. Do you have any personal stories about the holiday season, how you've seen it be more difficult, and why you think that is?
Right. Well, I do have lots of personal stories, and I was thinking about this show. One that comes to mind is the time that we all went to see a movie over the holidays. It was our whole extended family, and nieces and nephews and grandmas and papas, and everybody went. And my child, who has special needs, was with us, of course, and she was 5 at the time. And we didn't know it at the time because we hadn't experienced this yet, but movies were totally overwhelming for her, being in a big theater. All those people, lights down, big sounds, all of that was just totally overwhelming, and that was very, very difficult for her brain to process. So by the end of the movie, she was in complete meltdown mode and crying and screaming, and it was so hard. And the trickiest part about it was that we didn't know. So I'm sure it was not a very pleasant ending to the movie for lots and lots of people, but we were so puzzled because we had no idea that this was going to be a tricky thing. You know, she'd never had trouble with this before she'd gotten sick, and so we just figured it would be fine. So I think that unpredictability factor is so huge because sometimes parents don't know what is going to be distressing for a child. And often it's sort of like a game of don't spill the beans. Do you remember that game?
Yeah.
And you never know which bean is going to be the one that just spills everything over. So parents definitely need an extra measure of grace and support because, I mean, that was a three-hour-long crying day for my kid, which was uncomfortable for her. It was uncomfortable for everybody. And what was worse, that we just didn't know that that was going to happen. And, you know, we learned and we talked to the occupational therapist afterward and we figured out some strategies to make those sorts of things easier. But in the moment and in the hurry of the season, we had no idea that that was going to be tricky.
Yes, I have several friends that have actually communicated that because of meltdowns and things that have happened through the years at extended family Christmas events, like where all the cousins and everyone's together and it's a big gathering, because their child has had a series of meltdowns, they can't even go anymore.
Right.
So they feel incredibly alienated from their very own family, who I'm sure would love to understand. But it becomes a combination of, well, I don't want to put them through that, and I don't know what to do to get my child through, so I don't want to put them through that. And it's not peaceful, so we just don't go. The unfortunate piece of that, exactly what you just said, it's very isolating. You know, I went out last Saturday. My husband and I did our typical Saturday things, which includes a couple of antique flea markets and the same place for breakfast and one of the same places for lunch. And I heard more crying children, typical children, across the board last Saturday than I have ever. And I was like, every kid is so overwhelmed by this time of year. Obviously, everyone is. And I thought, wow, if this many kids who I see are typically developing are having a hard time, how much more so someone that really has to balance their sensory system? And I think, you know, that's something that we just think, oh, the lights and the smells and the change of routine is wonderful. But for people,
oh, look at the pretty lights.
Absolutely. It cannot be so much fun. So let's you and I kind of enumerate and discuss some of those stressors of the season. In your experience, what are some of the biggies that make what is a joyous season also a difficult one? What are some of those specific stressors?
Well, I think it's a lot of it is the lack of routine. A lot of kids with disabilities, and it can be anything from attention deficit disorders or learning disabilities, head injuries, kids with autism, any of those things, predictability is a wonderful thing. And the season in and of itself is just full of surprises. And that can be a great thing for some, but for kids affected by disabilities, it can be overwhelming. Even if they're happy about the surprise or the special day or the field trip or the treat or whatever, you know, that's a good stress, too, and eventually that can be really upsetting and wearing. So, and then especially for kids for whom routine is incredibly important to balancing out their day and to helping them with their behavior and so forth, it can be really hard. And I think, too, lack of sleep. Sleep is so important for so many reasons. But we know children are excited, families are busier, and that can set families up for a rough time, just when we're tired. Then there's lots of unfamiliar people as well. We haven't seen Aunt Sally since two Christmases ago, so we've got to get reacclimated to who she is and the fact that you know, she has really strong perfume, and that kind of bothers my nose, and I don't really want to hug her, and she's wearing a lot of lipstick, and all of those things can be really, really hard for kids. There's also a lot of expectations on kids right now. I think we feel it as adults. You know, we've got a lot to do. We've got shopping and cooking and baking and all of these parties to plan. But there's a lot of expectations on kids, too, to behave a certain way, to participate in pageants and choirs and their stuff at school. And that can be really stressful as well.
I echo all of that. I had sent an email this morning to my son's teaching staff saying, I know Noah had another headache yesterday, and I think we're going to be all right, but I wanted to make you aware of, you know, how we treat these. And one of the teachers emailed back and said, you know, all of the kids are so ramped up that it's so much louder here right now because the kids are so excited that I've noticed him having more sensitivity to sound. Sound is one of his triggers. And if he's going to intake that much more sound all day long, then there needs to be more decompression time at home. Not so much more, now we run out the door and head to Target where there's going to be 15 holiday light displays, and it's going to be really, really crowded. And there may be, you know, all kind of other sensory factors. When he was very young, he would get more clumsy, falling over and everything at that time of year. I can't tell you how many fountains and water treatments we fell into at Christmas. And I think it affected his sense of balance. I mean, I think for him, it's a whole brain situation with his disability. And I just saw so many different factors come into play that we monitor how long Christmas lights are on. We monitor how much Christmas music we're listening to. We stop and we think about how many Christmas specials we're watching on TV and how much stimulation he's had during the day. And now that he's in middle school, of course, it's exam time, which, what a great time of year to do assessments.
Although the upside of that is then he'll hopefully have a break over Christmas without too much to study. But there's a couple of things in what you just said that I think are really important for people to take away. One is that, you know, you said you monitor how much in terms of Christmas specials and how much Christmas music, how many light displays, all of those things. You know, you listen to any news program now or any of those talk shows, and they're all talking about monitoring your calorie intake for the season. And, you know, so that you don't end up with, you know, 5 or 10 extra pounds that you have to shed in January. I think that's a really good way to explain to pastors and neighbors and extended family that monitoring a child's abilities during the season is really not all that different from monitoring your calorie intake. It's not that we can't do anything. It's just that we've got to pick and choose what we're going to do so that we can stay healthy and that we don't get stuffed and feel uncomfortable. So that might be a really good way to help people understand. The other thing that you said that I really like is that the teacher said to you, all of the kids are ramped up. And at first I thought, my heart was kind of sad because many times there are teachers and pastors and other folks in our kids' lives who will tend to minimize what we're trying to communicate about what our kids need during this time. Oh, all kids are excited. All kids are tired. But she did something really important. She said, all of the kids are ramped up, and I see this as causing extra stress for your son because it's noisier and it's more exciting around here, and he is going to need some extra time to relax. And I so appreciate that. That's something that's really important for extended family and teachers and pastors to know, is that however hard it is for a typically developing kid, it's a lot more weighty and difficult for kids with disabilities. And to take that into account, we're not trying to ask for special treatment. We're not trying to get the easy way out. we're just trying to get through sometimes.
Yes.
And make it a joyful season for our family. So, you know, it goes back to that don't spill the beans kind of a thing. We've just got to be careful how many beans we're putting in this pot. So,
yes. And I love the calorie analogy. The calorie analogy, it is perfect because I'm sure you've read, as I have, that you call it a balanced sensory diet. You balance
right.
out how much
mm-hmm.
input is going in, and which
right.
actually may be healthy for a lot of us to do that again for people with typically developing nervous systems. But I love the calorie analogy.
Yeah.
So if you're a parent listening and you're really trying to explain this to someone who appears a little bit closed off, that is really a great analogy that I think anyone could pick up and embrace. And it knocks down the wall a little bit of someone who just
right.
might not think, I can't understand this kid. Well, you can understand
right.
this, and it's not mm-hmm. so different.
Right.
In that line of thought, what are some practical ways that families can manage the stress, whether it's at home or visiting at a relative's or something
okay.
like that?
Well, I think one thing is as much as is possible, have a plan and know what the commitments are and then pick and choose which ones are most important to your family. You don't have to do everything. It's okay that you don't. If there's a neighborhood party for cookie baking and there's also a school party and a Cub Scouts party, and you can pick and choose which ones are going to work for your family, and then don't feel guilty about it after that. You're doing what works for you, and that is
mm-hmm.
just fine. Barb Dittrick, who runs Snap-in Ministries in Wisconsin, always says, good enough is good enough. And
yes.
it doesn't have to be perfect. So if that means that you bake two kinds of cookies with your kids, or you only go to one neighborhood gathering instead of four, that's good enough, and that's just fine. Because the real purpose of the season is that the Prince of Peace is here. That's our focus.
Mm-hmm.
So do what's going to make you feel peaceful. And if you're really stressed out by a certain neighbor or by a certain event at your church that seems to always set your kids off, it's okay to say no and feel okay about it and just park that there. I think, too, it's important to think about the relatives that you might be visiting, because some of those are sort of command performances. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your
mm-hmm.
family is expected to go. One thing that I've suggested is if there are relatives who aren't familiar with your child and have not had an opportunity to learn a little bit about autism or brain injury or whatever the issue is, send a note ahead of time and say, hey, just wanted to let you know that these are the kinds of things that we're dealing with. These are the things that are helpful. You know, when my child can have maybe a spot on the stairs to read quietly, or, you know, unfortunately because of dietary sensitivities, we're going to be bringing our own food for him, but we're all really looking forward to your pumpkin pie. And we'll definitely have second helpings of that, but I'll be bringing along a little extra food so that everyone's tummy stays settled. You know, yes, it's possible that Uncle Joe might think that you're indulging your kid or that you're spoiling, but he'll know the truth, and at least you've made the effort to educate a little bit. I have a sample of that on my blog, actually, if people would find that helpful. Today I posted just a bunch of Christmas and accommodations, and so if folks would like to go and download some of that, they are more than welcome to do that.
Yes, I pressed that on my website as well. So there's a link on PNCRodenbeck.com to Diving for Pearls, which is
Weatherby.wordpress.com. And Weatherby is Weatherbee. So the other thing that I would really encourage people to read is Barb Newman's blog at CLC Network. She's doing a really neat series right now on helping kids through the holiday season. That is making us whole, that net, I think. But if you just Google CLC Network blog, you'll find it. And she's got some excellent recommendations. I love what she said about having a look through photo albums from Christmases past, just to re-familiarize kids with people's faces and with events and allowing them to rehearse a little bit. I think that's a great idea.
Perfect, perfect. Yes, I think that was part of her series I shared on the Shaping Special Hearts Facebook page this week as well, because it's very detailed.
It's really good. Yeah, she's fabulous.
Really great stuff. Really great stuff. I know that one of the things I learned to do, and one of the things I think Barb mentioned was, if possible, if it will help your child, you may want to arrive a little bit early so that they can process each person one at a time. You're also visiting with the host before everyone gets there, which may be your child's best time before everything, so they get to see the best of your child, your host does. But getting there early, I learned the hard way to strategically park in case you need to make a graceful exit from a family. Ollie, because you're the first one there, a lot of times you get locked in.
That's a great idea. I haven't thought about it.
Yeah, so park, you know, park strategically out a little bit, even if you get there early. Park in a place where you know you can leave so it doesn't add to anxiety or embarrassment to have to ask people to move their car. And that way, it always made me feel less anxious to know, you know, we can leave when we need to. And we got there a little bit early, spent special time with our hosts, so they weren't offended. And they would just tell people, oh, they were one of the first ones here. You know, and it was a little bit more acceptable if we had to.
Well, and it preserves your child's dignity, too, because nobody likes to be seen when they're upset. And so if you can preserve your child's dignity by a little extra planning, which, again, is so hard at this time of the year because so many things are happening, but that can be a good thing. And then trying to leave the party while everybody's still having a good time can be a really good thing, too, because then they might go back the next time. And we want them to have good relationships with relatives and neighbors and friends. So,
absolutely. What a great, great set of ideas and a great set of resources, again, that we will mention later, the address for the CLC Network blog and for Katie's website. And we'll go over those one more time later. That is filled with great practical ideas and some language that you can use to talk to family with humility and respect, just letting them know where your child is. And speaking of that, you have several resources designed to help churches, because church can be a very difficult place for children with special needs during the entire year. But during Christmas, we do special things, again, changing up the routine. We introduce new things maybe into the classroom routine. So let's talk about accommodations for some of the common activities that are going on in ministry at this time of year. And we have a list, but you share the things that you have found to be the most prominent and helpful, Katie.
Well, you know, one thing that I think trips us up pretty frequently in children's and youth ministries is that sometimes we get this idea that everybody should be doing the same thing. You know, they're kids, and so they're all going to be in the Christmas pageant, or they're all going to go Christmas caroling and then out for hot chocolate. And the reality is, we don't make adults all do the same thing. I mean, thank God, too, because if I was made to be on the softball team because every adult had to be on the softball team, I would cry tears because I'm horrible at softball and I don't want to play. So when I go and watch my husband and the team play, I always wear flip-flops, so there's no way I can get recruited.
That's right.
So that's my own little motivation for myself. Right. But I think it's important to sort of broaden our perspective and think, okay, yes, we're having a Christmas play. Yes, the majority of kids probably would like to be in the Christmas play, but not every kid has to be in it, and that's okay. So it's not that they can't, but if they prefer not to, let's think about ways that they could serve. Do we have kids who are talented artists? There's one young lady that I've worked with for a long time, and she's a really talented artist, and yet doesn't thrive being on the stage. That's just not her cup of tea. So we've had her working on sets before, and she is amazing, and that's what she enjoys, and that's so much less stressful for her and her family on performance times because they can sit and enjoy the performance and enjoy her great work on the scenery without the added pressure of having to be up there in the spotlight. So that's something that kids can do. Are they hospitable kids who really love being with grown-ups? Could they be greeters and pass out programs and show people to their seats? Are they talented technically? Is it possible that they could be involved in the tech aspects of the show? So there's lots and lots of opportunities when it comes to Christmas pageants and nativity scenes and all of these other kinds of things. You know, are they really service-minded? Would they prefer not to participate at all in the Christmas pageant, but perhaps they'd like to be involved in a little service project? And we don't want, of course, children's pastors to have to individualize Christmas for every single family, but what we can do is to provide maybe a menu of options that make it easy for the pastor as well. Say, you know, these following organizations in our community could really use some volunteers. Here are the numbers, here are the projects, and just list it out on the website so that you don't have to be in charge of everyone doing those things. But then have your main event and include people that would like to be included and feel good about it. But don't attach any sense of it being mandatory. So does that help a little bit?
It does. I directed children's choir for years and years, and it was very awkward for people for me to allow Noah to vary his participation. And I got all kinds of feedback on that, as you might imagine. The most successful thing for him was one particular year, he was the stage manager, which meant he was backstage, or off to the side, kind of had a title, because there's always a prop that needs to be handed to someone off stage, and, you know, or something that needs to be brought on. He can be a very detail-oriented person, and he was so much more happy and had special mention in the program for stage manager. You know, his name was there. You could do the same with the technical, the children that help with technical or set or greeters or anything like that. They could all have a very special mention in a program that includes them as part of a ministry team. Without being on stage, I think that's so helpful. What about Christmas parties that they may have at the church, or Christmas activities the children may do, where it may be a party and all of the kids are together, and this is something in lieu of something you typically do, like a children's worship or a Sunday school? What kind of things have you done?
Well, I think good communication is the foundation of all really good inclusion. When we take the time ahead of the event or ahead of the class to communicate what's going to happen, we just really give everybody a boost. That sets everybody up for success. So sending out an email blast or posting on the website or tweeting out, this is what we're doing, this is what it's going to look like, this is what we're serving, and so forth, that can be really a helpful thing, because families who have kids with disabilities who maybe can't have donuts in the morning, that way they could bring their own donuts, or they could say, gee, my kids are gluten-free. Others might be, I'd love to volunteer to bring some gluten-free treats to the breakfast, and that's a great way for them to participate too. The other thing is when you're planning big events, have a parent committee. And that's not even a committee that has to meet a lot, which is a great thing. You can do so much of this via email. But make sure that there's parents of disabilities on that committee and also parents of typically developing kids. So, for example, if you're going to have a Christmas pinata, for example, and one of the parents mentions that that's something that has gotten out of hand a lot of times because some of the kids who have perhaps issues with impulse control really struggle with being able to manage that, then maybe we put aside that pinata tradition for something else. And the great thing is then when other parents might say, well, hey, we're not doing a pinata, we always do that, the parents of typically developing kids can say, you know, our committee really felt like in the past some kids haven't enjoyed it, and so we decided to do something else. So it's not always the parents of kids with disabilities who are having to say, well, that just doesn't work for my kid. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So that kind of ownership from lots of different people can be helpful. And again, that's not a big time commitment for parents or for children's pastors because you can do a lot of that planning online or just meet for 15 minutes after church. That kind of thing can be really helpful.
And what that says to a parent of a child with special needs, just volumes. That speaks such volumes to we value you and your family so much that we want you to be part of a planning team for this. That's what it means to us. And speaking as a family who hasn't always felt included, to be given that kind of opportunity to talk to parents of typically developing children because we don't get to do that a lot. We don't do a lot of Little League or go to a lot of birthday parties or anything. That's a social interaction for them, too, and can be such a tremendous blessing to that parent to feel normal a little bit for just a little while. I'm getting to help with an event and not feeling awkward about planning something that works for my child because they're planning something that works for all the children. What a great idea, Katie.
Well, it also sends the message to that parent, teach me what works with kids that aren't like my kids. You know, my kids don't have gluten sensitivities or attention issues, so teach me so that I can be better because the last place in the world anyone should feel left out is at church. Now, we often hear, I know Jim Pearson has said it, he's sort of the granddad of special needs ministry. And he often has said the church generally follows the public school when it comes to caring for folks with disabilities. You know, we watch and we see best practices and then we integrate them. But wouldn't it be something if the schools started watching us? And they kept saying, wow, look at what they're doing. This is really excellent. This really makes a difference. And kids really feel included. Let's learn more about that. I mean, think of how strong the kingdom could be if we can turn those tables and the world were really watching to see what we're doing with kids affected with disabilities.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what a kingdom difference it could make in schools for typically developing children at these churches to then take those kingdom practices into their schools, and they are displaying inclusion because of Christ in a public school setting.
Right.
What a witness to the world.
Right. Well, and then teachers might even be saying, you know, that whole group of kids, they are just so great and so kind. What, you know, what's going on with that group of kids? And for someone to be able to say, oh, well, they all go to church together, I know that. It must be great. And help people be so curious that they might come and visit.
Absolutely. What an opportunity that is. What about Advent activities, Katie? I know that Advent is something we have struggled with in the past with Noah. He's such a concrete thinker that sometimes when I bring out words like peace and hope and things like that, he wants a very real he wants to understand it more, and I've struggled with that before. What kind of Advent activities, if we have some churches that's a part of their tradition, what kind of activities have you seen that help?
Well, one thing I always recommend is making sure that there is a hands-on type of nativity set. So whether it's something that you make, I've seen really crafty nativity sets that are made out of spools or those kinds of things, or something that you buy that is specifically for kids, that's safe for them, to really get their hands around the story. And the great thing about the Christmas story is that it so lends itself to kids telling and retelling and acting it out,
mm-hmm.
because it's very sequential, and it's really documented so well for us in the Book of Luke. So I think that can be really helpful. We have to remember, too, that when we're teaching any biblical concepts to kids with disabilities, presenting this as fact is so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
This is true. It's always true. This is what happened. And that can be really helpful because they'll internalize it as fact. In terms of abstract concepts, that's really tricky, you know, because when we talk about peace and we talk about hope and we talk about faith, those are all so, so difficult for lots of kids. So,
yes,
when we can relate it to an experience that they've already had, so if you're going to be talking about peace, for example, and saying something like, do you remember how you felt at the beach when we were sitting quietly and the sun was warm and the temperature was just right? That felt peaceful. We didn't have any responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so relating it to an experience that they've had can be a really helpful thing.
That's a great idea. That's a wonderful, wonderful idea. It's just, we use such beautiful imagery this time of year, and sometimes we don't consider how that imagery might sound to someone. Because, you know, he's light. I mean, you hear all kind of things about being the light of the world, and Christmas carols add a lot more energy to that fire, and in songs mm-hmm. that they sing, and different words that are used, and there can just be a lot of ideas floating around. And I love your idea about the nativity, because sometimes in our elementary, especially upper elementary, middle school classrooms, we don't do those anymore. We may keep mm-hmm. those in churches in our early childhood rooms, our preschool rooms,
mm-hmm.
but we think, well, you know, the elementary kids, they're not going to, you know, play or get us into that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could really make a lot of difference to, like you said, have that hands-on thing. And it's amazing how much they'll all enjoy it. They'll
mm-hmm.
they'll all play, if that's what you want to call it.
Oh, it's true.
In retelling and in having it, yeah. So I think that is a great, great idea for concrete evidence of presenting fact, and then letting the story do what it does.
Another great resource for explaining some of those trickier concepts as kids get older is a video called Why Do We Call It Christmas? It's part of the What's in the Bible series from Phil Vischer, and he developed VeggieTales. And it's about 30 minutes, and it goes quickly. So it's definitely the kind of thing that would lend itself to watching and rewatching, or watching in short segments. Then there are downloadable activities that go with it, and discussion points. It's really a neat thing. And I had all of the nieces and nephews in my house last year, and I had been given a copy. Amy Dolan, who was on the curriculum team, sent me a copy to have a look at. And I had kids ranging from ages 6 all the way to, like, 23 in my living room, and they were all mesmerized by this video. I'm not kidding you.
Those are so well done. So well done. I love his work. Yes.
Right. And for kids who are really into the facts, I mean, this is extremely factually based. You know, we dig into what Santa Claus actually has to do with Christianity, and it ties in why we have Christmas in December, and did it really happen then? And, you know, all of these kinds of things, and then the songs are cute, but if your kids aren't into music or that really bothers them, you fast forward it. It's an easy thing to accommodate to a family.
Great. What another great idea. And I think the power of the story will do its work. The premise of this show is that even if your heart is special, it can still be shaped. There are ways to share this story. I had an email from someone this week that said, thank you for still saying that we can present the Bible to kids like this, because I just don't want them to be babysat. And I'm glad for that. But I really want to know that they can still hear the story. I really want to know. And we believe that's true, and I know that you do too, and I appreciate
Absolutely.
So much all of those great tips that are part of our story as a church, part of our story as a people, that, like the people of Israel, that retold and retold and retold, and that's why we do this every year, to make it a part of our story.
Right, and again, I think, you know, we've got to translate it back to how we are as adults. I don't understand everything that my pastoral team understands. I haven't been to seminary. I don't know Greek. I don't have it at that intricate level. So does that mean that I don't know it well enough? Well, I'd say no. I think I know it at my level, and that's just fine. And, you know, we were having a discussion with a church not too long ago where there was a real worry about kids reaching the age of accountability, and what if they really don't understand the salvation message? And I think the bottom line is, until human beings are able to assess souls, that's not our job. We just don't worry about it. God can handle it just fine without us. He's been doing it for millions of years, and he'll continue to do it. I don't believe that souls are disabled. So I'm
absolutely
assured that, yes, we do bear responsibility for the Christian education of our kids. And we've got a biblical mandate. Churches do, parents do, all of us do, that, you know, God didn't say, my colleague Rebecca always says, Rebecca Hamilton with Key Ministry always says, God didn't say, let the well-behaved children come to me, or let the kids that have average to above-average IQs come to me. She said, let all of the children come to me. And
yes, ma'am.
So we know for sure that's what we're charged with doing.
Absolutely. And Katie, as someone who has been to seminary, I completely agree with your assessment and wrote much about exactly what you said in my thesis work. I said, it's like Barb Dietrich, good enough is good enough, and they'll understand. And this is a powerful story, and it will do its work. It will do its work in their heart, presented thoughtfully with a lot of these great, great ideas that you have, and even more on your website. But before we get to that and close up, I want to just kind of end with a small discussion on reaching out. After all of our conversation and knowing how difficult a season this can be, and how parents may be taxed so much, and maybe at that moment of deciding to go to church or not to go to church, or attend the event or not attend the event, just feel defeated and not go, how can churches really reach out to families affected by these special circumstances during this holiday season to kind of let them know this is the place where you belong because of this story?
Right. I think this really starts in the neighborhood. to be honest with you, I think we have to be really intentional about helping folks that go to church to reach out in their neighborhoods and invite and say, hey, we're having a special concert, and it's going to be a quiet one, so it should be easy for everyone to manage. We would love to have you come. There's going to be crafts for the kids, and, you know, come and be our guest. We would really like that. The other thing is to be really mindful that if there are families in the neighborhood that, you know, are affected by disabilities or in your community and they can't get out very often, offer to babysit. You know, say, hey, my daughter, my teenage daughter and I, we're going to come over and you all go out and get some Christmas shopping done because it's a busy time of the year. Or invite them over for dinner. These families are not often invited over for dinner. And you mentioned that earlier. It's complicated and it's a little bit scary. And so to get a phone call that says, we would love to have you come over for dessert. You're going to have to teach me a little bit about what your kids can and can't eat and what they might like to do while they're here, but we would really love to have you over. You know, again, it doesn't have to be a long, long evening. We want everybody to leave the party while they're having a good time. But that can be a really helpful thing as well. For several years when our kids were really little, we had what we called a birthday party for Jesus in our neighborhood. And just have kids come over for an afternoon and have pin the crown on Jesus and some birthday cake and some stories. And that's a great way to reach out to your neighbors in a really non-threatening way. And then get to know them a little bit and then say, hey, would you like to come with us to church on Christmas Eve? We're really excited about it. That can be a great way. So I really think that it's got to be organic. It's got to be in relationships. Jesus was all about relationships. And I think that's when people are going to feel wanted and needed in the church body is when we reach out to them in a personal way.
Yes, we were invited this year for the first time ever to a Happy Birthday Jesus party in someone's home. It's going to be in a few weeks. And they said, you know, we really think it'll be great. We don't have a lot of kids here, and we can do a couple crafts, and they're simple. And they'll be the kids will be working in the kitchen and the dining room. And if Noah needs a break, we can, you know, he can bring his iPad and every once in a while go into one of the bedrooms and close the door. They had thought ahead of time, how can we remove every obstacle possible to just try and include? And they went so far as to tell me, you know, you don't have to stay. If you want to stay, you're welcome to stay with them. But if you'd like to go get some shopping done while we do this for the afternoon, there are going to be a lot of parents here, and, you know, we're going to be okay. And I thought, wow, I'm so glad we get to go at 13. How wonderful that would have been at 5, you know, and how great that would have been. What an easy thing for a family to be able to do and just say, you want to come, come. Katie, I just can't thank you enough for the conversation and for the wealth of materials that you have put on your website for parents and for ministry leaders and for someone who is listening who may be saying, you know, I can't create a whole Christmas pageant, but I can have a couple kids over and do a Happy Birthday Jesus party. Would you tell us about some of the things that you put on your website and give out that information one more time for our listeners?
Sure. What I did was just kind of went back through my blog over the last couple of years and pulled things that I've written specifically about Christmas. So there is a section of articles on there that has to do with accommodating kids' needs at church and at home and at family gatherings. There's another section on just some easy resources. There's a free download. There's some other links to things like the why do we call it Christmas video, and I created a little scavenger hunt that can be done in the neighborhood, either with kids or with teens, that you can download. So there's those kinds of things. And then also just some encouragement and meditations on Christmas with special needs in mind. So hopefully if there's someone who's needing a little encouragement, that's a link that you can share just to give a mom or a dad a bit of a boost during this time of the year. My website is katieweatherby.wordpress.com, and it's katieweatherby.wordpress.com. So if hopefully, you know, those links will be helpful. Again, I don't have all the answers, my goodness. But hopefully one of the links there would spark an idea that might work in someone else's home or church this season. And if it does, I would love to hear the ideas that other folks have, because, you know, what is this ministry if we don't all work together?
Absolutely, absolutely. Katie, thank you so much. This has been an encouragement to me, and I know to someone who is going to listen to this and say, either I can serve a family this way or I am that family. It's so good to hear of a way I can make this happen for us and keep peace on earth, because as you so eloquently said, this is about the Prince of Peace coming here to be with us. Thank you so much.